everyone. Welcome to the program Beyond Winning, where we discuss the many aspects of high school basketball from the perspective of coaches and individuals that have dedicated most of their lives to the game. Here we want to provide insight into the strategies, intent, and the impact of coaches as it relates to the development of young men and women who pursue the game. We will discuss the history and highlights, the successes and instances where success escaped them. We want to get at the soul of coaching. We want to get beyond the X's, beyond the O's, and beyond winning. If you would like to catch up with us at Beyond Winning, please follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at BW_SOC. Today, we are live streaming parts of the program on Instagram. You can also email us at bwsoulofcoaching@gmail.com. We welcome to the program today Coach Dwayne Cherry. Coach Cherry is the head boys basketball coach at Charlotte Country Day Academy, where he also teaches mathematics. Coach Cherry played football and basketball at Country Day in his high school days, and he was named All-State after his senior year in playing football. He also went on to play at Guilford College, and on the basketball team at Country Day, he was an important role player and a part-time starter his senior year. Coach Cherry started coaching AAU basketball in 2005, and then 3 years later, he coached at J.T. Williams Middle School for 3 years before becoming a varsity assistant and head junior varsity coach at Independence, where he expected to stay for several years just to pay his dues before getting a head coaching job. And then in 2011, he became the head coach at Charlotte Country Day's boys basketball team. Coach Cherry, good afternoon, and thank you for being in the program today.
Thank you for having me.
So glad you could be here. It took us a little while. We had several times scheduled, and then I think the last time we had it scheduled, Hurricane Flo came through.
Yep.
And so we decided to kind of hold off, but glad you could make it here today.
Thank you.
Coach, like we were talking earlier, it's just a given. Most coaches that I've met, the ones that really are into the game, they want to win.
Yep,
that's a major goal.
Yep.
Okay. But most of the coaches too, there's been more to it than that. So what drew you into coaching basketball? And really in particular, you were a standout football player.
Yeah.
Most would think you would go the football route.
Yep.
But you took the basketball route.
Yep. Well, basketball has always been my first love.
Mm-hmm.
From playing sports as a little kid. Growing up, I was one of the younger kids in the neighborhood. And so, we played football in the street, football in the front yard. And again, being one of the younger, smaller kids, the older kids kind of took me under their wing and mentored me and helped me become a better player, better person.
You were the little brother they beat, yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
Exactly. So they roughed me up a little bit, but it was all love.
Yeah.
So that actually helped me become a better football player in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
As those older kids sort of grew up and moved off and phased out, then I became one of the older kids in the neighborhood. I did the same thing with the younger kids, kind of taking them under my wing. So I guess that's where kind of the coaching aspect started to come into play, by taking younger kids in the neighborhood under my wing, as the older kids did for me when they were there.
Mm-hmm.
But basketball was always my first love, but for some reason, I wasn't as good in basketball as I was in football.
Uh-huh.
And so even in middle school and high school, I played both sports, but I was always a better football player.
Mm-hmm.
So when it was time to go to college, I just didn't have the interest from college coaches in basketball like I did in football.
Yeah.
So to pay for school, I decided to go the football route.
I got you.
Whatever was going to, pay the bills and make it easier for my parents. So that's why I ended up playing football in college. But I knew when I started coaching, it was going to be basketball.
I got you.
Because even in college, we do intramural basketballs, but it wasn't the typical intramural. We took it serious.
Oh, okay.
Because we loved it so much.
Uh-huh.
We'd have people record our games in college. We'd go back to the dorm room and watch film and try to do, better strategies and break down the film. So it was things that we were doing in college, kind of already starting to coach ourselves, to once we finished school, I said, yeah, this is something I definitely want to do. And because basketball was my first love, That's why I went in the basketball direction.
And I would imagine that some of those older guys that, you know, while they might have roughed you up, mm-hmm. I think they also probably took you aside and said, hey, this is why I did this. This is why I did. So they were really, you know, in informal coaches.
Exactly, exactly. And then even things off the field, just life lessons, things they would share with me because they were in high school. I may have been in sixth or seventh grade, so they had experienced things that I hadn't experienced yet. So they would share stuff with me about their school day, about things that were going on in their home that they were going through. So when I faced certain challenges or situations, I was a little more prepared because they had shared those things with me.
Yeah, so it was a community thing. Now, was this in Charlotte?
I grew up in Charlotte, in Hidden Valley.
Okay, yeah, yep, okay. Hidden Valley neighborhood. I got you. Yeah, that's all right. Yeah, Hidden Valley at a time mm-hmm. had a rich history.
Back in, you know, I was born in 75, so you're talking late 70s, 80s, mm-hmm. that time, very community-based, and everybody knew everyone. Mm-hmm. Families were close to each other. All the kids would go outside and play, which you don't see as much nowadays.
Yeah.
We had good relationships then.
Yeah.
Really good relationships.
So you got the example of coaching at an early age, mm-hmm. and then you carried that on through. And you were in a tough college conference. You were in ODAC.
ODAC.
You know, and at a good school.
Yes, yes.
You know, Guilford's a good school.
Strong academic school.
Yeah, yeah. And like I was talking earlier, your math background, mm-hmm. Comes into play. So my sense is that strategically, you bring all that into the mix.
Absolutely, absolutely. No, Guilford was a great school, great experience. When I graduated from Charlotte Country Day, I actually went to A&T for 2 years, North Carolina A&T for 2 years, and then I ended up transferring to Guilford. Guilford, A&T and Guilford actually laid a solid foundation.
Yeah.
Like you say, the ODAC was a tough conference. You know, mm-hmm. schools like Emory and Henry, Randolph-Macon, Washington and Lee, mm-hmm. Hampton-Sydney, mm-hmm. very strong conference. So we faced some good competition, and we had good coaches at Guilford too, football and basketball. Coach Jensen, who was the basketball coach at the time, had legendary teams with ML Carr, World Be Free.
Those guys
mm-hmm. played back in the 70s, way before we got there, but they had national championships. So the foundation, the history, tradition was already laid when we got there. Mm-hmm. So we just tried to keep it going.
I got you. So tell me, now you got the Country Day because there was a coach that you played under.
Mm-hmm.
Who was really, once he retired, he really wanted to get you in.
Yep.
But I guess, the timing wasn't right.
Yeah.
But he kind of kept you in his file.
Yep.
And then one day, I guess you got the call.
Exactly. Coach Kevin Daly is who I played for when I was at Charlotte Country Day. And we had some really good teams. We had some really good teams back then. It was very competitive back then in the early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't as many high schools.
Yeah.
So all of your kids were piled into one school, which means you just had so much talent on each team. In our conference, Charlotte Christian was good. Todd Fuller was at Charlotte Christian with Anton Hubert, Chase Matheny at Charlotte Latin. But we had a good team in our own right. And Coach Daly, we always stayed in touch after mm-hmm. I graduated.
Mm-hmm.
He does camps, Christmas time, summertime, and I would always come back and work his camps. Although I had graduated, we stayed in touch because I worked his camps every year. So when positions would come open, like there was a middle school math position open 3 or 4 years before I actually came to Country Day. And like you say, it was a timing thing.
Mm-hmm.
He reached out to me. I actually went on the interview, did the interview, was offered the job to teach middle school math, but the timing just wasn't right.
I got you.
So when he called 3 or 4 years later, it just worked out well.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I had stayed in touch with not just him, but the community at Country Day as well.
Okay.
And so it was just a good fit, and the timing was good.
Now, when you played, was there a situation where the private schools played the public schools?
No, we weren't allowed to play Charlotte Mecklenburg schools.
Okay.
We could play public schools outside of CMS.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd play schools like South Iredale, Crest,
uh-huh.
Schools that weren't in the CMS district. But we always wanted to play CMS schools.
Oh, yeah.
Because a lot of us grew up in CMS. So K-9, we were in CMS. So
right.
We had so many friends playing at West Charlotte,
uh-huh.
South Meg, Independence. And we would always have those discussions of could we beat them. And they would always joke with us because we were playing private school that we wouldn't be able to keep up.
Yeah.
But a lot of the guys on our team, like Eric Polite, Taj Polite, D. Rankin, those guys grew up playing in public school football and basketball. So our argument would always be, well, we grew up playing with you guys.
Yeah.
So what's really changed?
Yeah.
Just because we're over here now doesn't mean that we're less talented than we were 1 or 2 years ago.
Now,
so.
You said discussion. I mean, I'm sure when you got in them rec centers and that, and this was not, your social media wasn't out there, so
no.
It wasn't like a discussion.
No, no, you know? It was a little more than a discussion.
Yeah, yeah, it was a little, you know.
You know, Macquarie YMCA,
yeah.
Sugar Creek Recreation Center, mm-hmm. Methodist Home, some places that I grew up playing.
I'm sure there was some undercover,
yeah.
Undercover, you know, Country Day,
absolutely.
West Charlotte,
absolutely.
South Mass, some little undercover matches.
Definitely. So when we go to places like that, we would be on the same team intentionally.
Yeah.
And so we play pickup basketball against these guys just to remind them, like, no, we can still play. Just because we're over here now, nothing has changed.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, I hear you. So, you know, the season is, you know, about ready to start. Matter of fact, I think you had some fall leagues or something. You
yep.
came over here before.
Yep.
What kind of things, you know, what kind of things are you, you know, getting involved in to get your team prepared for this upcoming season?
Well, Fall League is one of the things that we're doing out at Kennedy Middle School. We play every Saturday. Normally, it's about 2 games that we play each Saturday out at Kennedy Middle School. So that's just to kind of get us some reps against different competition to get us prepared for the season, to see how we look against guys who are not that we're not familiar with. Because what can happen in workouts a lot of times is guys are comfortable with who they're playing against.
Mm-hmm.
But as coaches, we want to see how do you do when you play against someone that you don't know.
I got you.
So we've been doing a lot of preseason workouts, doing a lot of things in the weight room and on the track as far as conditioning and just getting stronger. Our strength and conditioning coach, Darnell Clark, is one of the best in the country.
Mm.
So we're fortunate to have him. And we've made a big emphasis on lifting weights this preseason.
Mm-hmm.
We're just trying to get our guys bigger, stronger, even tougher. I think when you lift weights, your mentality changes.
I got you.
You feel, even you may have only had minimal improvements, you feel stronger and tougher and you play different.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully that stuff carries over into the season. But no, preseason workouts have been going well. This is the second week of Fall League. So
okay.
It's still, you know, we're still sort of early into that.
Right.
But some of the younger guys are showing some good things. And, you know, the older guys, we know what we're going to get from them,
mm-hmm.
the juniors and seniors, because you've seen them for 3 or 4 years already.
Do you have quite a few coming back from last year's team?
Yeah, actually, you know, we had a pretty good year last year. We were third in the conference,
okay.
Made the quarterfinals of the state playoffs,
mm-hmm.
and we have 4 starters returning, 4 out of 5.
Oh, okay, cool.
Lost our best player, D'Angelo Epps.
Mm-hmm.
He's over at Carmel Christian now with Joe Badgett and those guys.
Oh, okay.
So he's doing well, but we have 4 starters returning, so
mm-hmm.
we should have a pretty solid team this year. We have some pretty good expectations about what we should do this year.
Yeah, yeah. You got a couple good players. I was able, I think I saw you guys play, it was probably the last regular season game against Providence Day.
Yeah.
And there was a couple players out there that I were impressed with, you know, just in terms of, you know, how they fit into your system.
Yeah.
You know, and how they, you know, and how they operated in your system.
Yeah, no, our point guard, Riley McLaurin, is a heck of a player. He really doesn't get the credit he deserves, but he makes us go.
Mm-hmm.
When he's off the floor, we're a completely different team.
Mm-hmm.
His on-ball defense is some of the best that I've seen in a long time. And on the offensive end, he's just a heck of a playmaker. He sets guys up. He breaks down the defense off the dribble. Alex Tabor, as far as shooting, I'd put him against anyone in the state.
Mm-hmm.
He's starting to get some college interest, even on the D1 level.
I got you.
And then we have Richard and Walker Gillespie, twins. They play soccer, but they're very athletic, very energetic. Miles Browner is
mm-hmm.
another returning senior
okay.
who can do it all. He's sort of a combo-type guard. So, no, we have some pieces this year. I'm excited about this season.
That's all right. That's
yeah.
all right. So you mentioned a little bit about recruiting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're doing your workouts. You're in the gym. I think, you know, fall time is when some of the coaches, college coaches, make their rounds.
Mm-hmm.
How do you handle that process? You know, and just what's your program there?
Yeah, I try to be proactive. If I have kids that I feel like can play at the next level and kids that want to play at the next level, I try to reach out to coaches as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
I try to send highlight videos, email coaches, text messages. Sometimes if I'm in other gyms and I see college coaches, I may walk up to them and introduce myself and let them know I have certain players they should come and see. And then we'll send them a workout schedule. Here are the days that we're working out. And I aggressively go after them, trying to get them in the gym. Because my big thing is, from my experience in playing high school and being recruited in college, I always want to see each kid reach their maximum level mm-hmm. or their potential.
I got you.
So I'm aggressively trying to get kids seen, you know, put them in the best situation. Summer as far as AAU basketball, what teams are going to be showcased and play in front of the most coaches. And once they come in the gym, I tell the guys then, it's up to you now.
Yeah.
You know, my job is to get them there.
That's right.
Once they get in the gym, you got to show and prove now.
You got to have something for them.
You got to have something for them, so it's on you now. But even when the coaches come in the gym, we try to do drills or workouts that the kids are comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't want to spring a new drill on a kid that he hasn't done before while a coach is sitting right there watching.
Yeah.
Because now that kid is like, oh, coach, I haven't done this one before. So it may be a drill that we've done, or we may go over the routine before mm-hmm. the coaches get there.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, we got a coach coming Thursday. Meet me in the gym on Tuesday. Here's what we're going to do for that coach to make you look your best.
Uh-huh.
So it's things like that. And then after that, it's about making good relationships.
Yeah.
So if you have guys that have been recruited by those coaches, once that kid graduates, just staying in touch with those coaches in case you get somebody else that comes through.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What about the recruiting process? What's your overall thoughts about the recruiting process? I mean, you gave a good description of mm-hmm. how you prepare for it, how you get kids ready for it,
mm-hmm.
and how you market to young people.
Yeah.
But is the recruiting process? I mean, I know the recruiting process has its good parts and it has its downsides.
Yeah.
But overall, mm-hmm. what's your thoughts on that?
It can be frustrating. It's an exciting time for kids to get interest from coaches, but it can also be frustrating. I think two of the biggest things is, number one, you want honesty from the college coaches.
Mm-hmm.
If a college coach comes in and sees your player, you want honest feedback. Coach, is he good enough to play at your school? Like, you don't want any beating around the bush or anything like that. Just be straight up with me.
Mm-hmm.
If he can't play at your school, then let's not waste each other's time.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to drag this out. And then because, secondly, the kids' emotions are invested.
Yeah.
And I think that's the biggest thing we see at the high school level. These kids, they want to be recruited.
Yeah.
And so when they hear that a college coach is coming, the first thing they're thinking is, if I play well, they're going to offer me. Sometimes the college coaches come with no intent to offer. They're just coming simply to do their due diligence to watch the player.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the kids want to know that.
Yeah.
I mean, they're still going to play their best, but you want to kind of get their emotions. You want to protect their emotions as their coach. And sometimes I don't know if the college coaches, especially if they don't have experience at the high school level, I don't know if they're aware of that. So one of the things I try to do now, and it took me some years to learn that,
because
I was the same way my first 5 or 6 years. Coaches are coming. And I would get excited just like the players, only for the coaches to come, no offers.
Mm-hmm.
And then my players come to me, what did he think, coach? And you don't really have a straight answer to give your player.
Yeah.
Well, he said he liked you. He was going to come back and watch you during the season.
Nothing kind of definitive.
Definitive.
And like you said, the young player is looking. They're saying, well, if the coach decided to come,
mm-hmm.
then there's going to be a conclusion.
Yes.
And like you said, that might not be the case.
Yeah. So you're still kind of left at the same state you were when they came in.
Mm-hmm.
Coming in, I didn't really know what he thought about me. And leaving out, I still don't really know what he thinks about me.
Mm-hmm.
He says he's going to come back to a couple of games. It just seems very vague.
Yeah.
And so now what I try to do is not press the coaches for straight up answers, but, coach, let's just talk straight up.
Because mm-hmm.
I don't have anything to lose, and you're not recruiting me.
Yeah.
So, I'm not worried about what answer you give me, but I want to be able to tell my player and his family,
yeah,
here's where you are. They like you. He's coming today. He's not ready to make an offer. You're fourth on his list.
Mm.
They have 3 point guards ahead of you in your class.
Yeah.
If they don't get those 3 point guards, you're the next guy up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I want to be able to tell the player that.
Yeah.
So they know where they stand with the college coaches. So now that kid can make a better decision, too. If they offer you, and I've told kids this, you weren't their top choice. So how do you feel about that? You have to go there for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Are you okay with not being their top guy?
Yeah.
You know, but at least the kid and the family has the correct information to make a decision with. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
A lot of kids don't know where they stand. And sometimes the high school coaches don't know where they stand.
Mm-hmm.
But I have good coaches, coaches that I have good relationship with, like Wes Miller
mm-hmm.
at UNCG. He's a Country Day guy.
Yeah, okay.
So Wes and I have known each other for years. So he's someone that I may reach out to if I have questions about the recruiting process. hey, Wes, I talked to so-and-so. Tell me, what do you think this means? Interpret this for me.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Guy, and other coaches that I know as well, but guys like that can give me, you know, a good direction to go in when it comes to the recruitment process.
I got you. Well, Coach, we're gonna take a time out right now.
Okay.
And then come back on the other side of the break.
Okay.
I'm here with Coach Dwayne Cherry, Charlotte Country Day. I'm Richard Lancaster. This is Beyond Winning. And if we're live streaming, so if you've got a thought on the off-the-wall question, we sure would appreciate it. We'll be back on the other side of the break, and I'm going to call a timeout.
All right.
Beyond the owners, beyond winning. Beyond Winning. We're here with Coach Dwayne Cherry from Charlotte Country Day School. I'm Richard Lancaster, and we were talking about the recruiting process. And Coach, while we were on the break, we were talking about, you know, how the recruiting process and the interview process kind of have some similar characteristics. But we were talking in that process where, or you had mentioned about coaches, you know, you need to get, you know, the information from the coaches just so you can tell your player, you know, mm-hmm. where they stand from that standpoint. And, you know, sometimes you get coaches that are, you know, very transparent, you know, yeah. right up front with you. Sometimes you don't get that. And so it's put you in a position where you kind of had to interpret, mm-hmm. you know, what is said and then what is not said
exactly.
in order to translate that.
No, you're right. So, you know, now that this is my ninth year at Country Day, now that I've been doing it for a few years, you know, you kind of understand the messages, like you said, what's said and what's not said. So I just think as high school coaches, it's our job to protect these kids because they're not familiar with the process. And sometimes the parents aren't familiar with it. So it's their first time going through it. But these kids, they, especially some of the kids that come in, that transfer in, mm-hmm. they're looking for these opportunities. And they see their peers getting these offers and they're asking questions like, well, what's going on? Especially if they feel like they're just as talented as some of these other guys. And when these offers don't come in, but coaches are constantly texting them, calling them, coming to the gym, the kids don't know how to interpret that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if this coach keeps calling me and keeps texting me, he must think I'm pretty good, but he hasn't offered me anything, so how good does he think I am? Or what do I need to do? If this coach comes to the gym and watches me work out, and I have an outstanding workout, why would he not offer me? And a lot of times the college coaches don't answer those questions, whether it be from the family or whether it's from us as the high school coaches. So now having done this and having sent a number of kids to college to play now, you know, you can tell these kids that are being recruited, if they haven't offered you yet, either there's something they haven't seen from you that they want to see, or they probably have other guys ahead of you mm-hmm. that they're recruiting and they're waiting to see what they do first because you're not their number one priority. What you'll see is if you're a top priority, when these coaches watch you play and they like you, they offer you on the spot.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, some coaches will say, well, we need to see a transcript. We need to watch a game. We need to come back and watch him work out. But then you turn around and see, well, you just offered this kid after watching him one time.
Mm-hmm.
No transcript. You didn't watch any games. You went to no workouts. You saw him at one event. You liked what you saw. You offered him right there on the spot.
Yeah.
So why is it not the same for this kid?
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, this kid is not a top priority. You may like him. So what you now do is you communicate with the kid just to kind of keep him at arm's reach.
Mm-hmm.
And so now, if you do decide to offer him, even though he wasn't your top priority, you can say, well, don't forget, we always stayed in contact. We liked you from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we text you and we called you and we came to some of your workouts. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Kind of trying to play that game with the kid, which I don't think is right.
Well, see, and that's, you know, when we talk about coaching, see, that's the role, you know, that you have to step in and play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you said, not only for the kid, but for the parent, because I think Studio B made a good mention, is that, you know, this is a fragile time for
yes.
the player. And then you as a coach, you really, you know, again, going back to our, you know, our basic assumption is mm-hmm. you want to win games, so you want that player to be focused.
That's right. That's right.
But, you know, just like all of us, you know, if you got, you know, this question out there and why is this and why is that, and then all of a sudden now it's game time, you know, and, hey, they're all over. And you know how, you know, like we were when we were young.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
So. No, you have kids because we've had a kid that was being recruited, D'Angelo Epps, and schools were starting to come in. And he hadn't really received an offer yet, but they were really watching him. So he didn't know, is this, like, when we're playing games, coaches are in the crowd. Is this the game they're going to offer me? Do I need to score 30 points? Is that what they want to see? Do I need to score 20 points? Grab 15? Like, you're trying to play team basketball, but at the same time, if we're going to be real, you're trying to get that offer as well.
Yeah.
Because you want to play college basketball. And because the coaches have been in touch with you and watched you so many times and have been offered, you're still trying to figure out, what are they trying to see from me? So now you're trying to play team ball, but at the same time, you're trying to impress the coach that you see sitting in the bleachers. And as a young kid, that can be difficult to manage and try to balance both of that. Whereas if the coaches were straight up and said, hey, look, D'Angelo, we like you. You're number five on our list. We got four other guys we're recruiting. If they go in a different direction, we're coming back for you. So now I can play a little more relaxed. Okay, I know where I stand with you. I know what you think about me. You like me, but you got some guys ahead. Okay, I appreciate the honesty, coach. You know, now I can go out here and just play basketball. But a lot of times coaches, college coaches don't do that, I think, because they don't want to lose the kid.
Yeah.
They may be afraid, well, if I tell them that, we're going to lose them.
Yeah.
Whereas you're already losing them anyway. Because once you keep texting, and you'll see these players sometimes say, coach so-and-so text me again. And you can see in their body language, it's starting to get old.
I wish they would
just tell me something.
Yeah.
Because they've been texting me for the last 3 or 4 months, and nothing's happened.
Well, as a coach, how do you, in that environment, okay, you got the players that have that potential to be recruited, but then you have players that, you know, they're not going to go on to play college. But like you said, you got a team full of promise here.
Yeah.
And now you want to, you know, you want to keep them focused on, you know, the task at hand, you know. And so you got all these, you know, competing things going on. Yeah. What's your program there?
Well, you know, we have to tell the guys that if they want you, they'll offer you. And we try to make it that cut and dry and that simple. If they want you, they will offer you. So don't be distracted about why they haven't offered. If they haven't offered you yet, you have to understand they don't want you right now. Now, that may be a hard pill to swallow, but that's just the truth. Because then, like I said, we can show them examples of, they went and saw this kid play one game, they offered him. They've come to see you 4 or 5 times, they haven't offered you. So clearly, you're not a top priority for them. So don't worry about what they think about you when you play. They've seen you 4 or 5 times. They know what kind of player you are. You're not going to show them anything tonight they haven't seen before. So just go out and play your game and play the best that you can play to help this team. You know, but get all those other distractions out of your mind. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen. We'll do our job as coaches to reach out and continue to advocate for you. But if they're going to offer you, they're going to offer you. So don't be fooled or teased by these text messages. Hey, saw you play tonight. You had 20 points. You look good. Okay, but you haven't offered. So I'm not going to put too much stock into that text message.
Right.
Because if I really played that well, coach, you would have offered me.
I got you.
You know, so we try to get them to look at it from that perspective. I don't know if that makes college coaches happy or not. But we're trying to protect our players.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. Let me switch gears for a minute, coach.
Okay.
So, you know, We've talked about a number of things as it relates to coaching over the course of the program. And I think you talked to one of our coaches. I know him, Coach CJ. You know, Coach CJ, you guys must have had a conversation. Coach CJ said, hey, this is somebody you need to get onto the program. And but we've talked about, you know, just some thoughts and philosophies. Now, there's a saying out there that this company says, always stay on offense. But I've come up with this idea and thought and thrown it out to other coaches. And I want to get your thoughts on this philosophy. Defense is offense.
I like that. defense, that I can definitely understand that saying, defense is offense. You know, it's funny you say that because we just played a game the other day. I'm coaching a fall league with some younger kids with Randall Clark, who used to work at Accelerate Training. Mm-hmm. And fall league is out at Providence Day on Sundays. And sometimes you may not have the most talented team from an offensive standpoint. So what we've done with some of the guys is if we play good defense, that will generate good offense. Mm-hmm. So that mindset of if we pressure the ball or pressure our opponent, if you want to look at it from a different standpoint off the court, if we pressure our opponent, sometimes we'll force them into mistakes that they may not have made otherwise had we not applied any defensive pressure. Create turnovers, now that generates easy offense. So now we don't have to score everything out of the half court and call a set play and run screens and execute. If our defense is where it should be, that will help produce good off or easy offense for us. Mm-hmm. So now we're getting wide open shots. We're getting layups in transition. Not necessarily because we're calling different plays. We just picked up our defensive intensity, and now that's generated good offense for us. Mm-hmm. So I definitely understand where defense can be offense. And even if you look at it from, you know, the NBA, people talk about Golden State and how good they are offensively. They're also one of the best defensive teams in the league as well. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times, because of their good defense, you see them get out in transition and push the basketball. Steph, Clay, those guys are getting wide open looks, not just offset plays all the time, but because their defense has now generated their offense because they're out in transition. And if you're not getting back in transition, now they're getting wide open looks. Mm-hmm. The things that he brought to us.
Yeah.
Like, it's not any particular drills that we've done to give him that. He's played so much basketball. He has older brothers that were pretty good players. His oldest brother played at the Naval Academy.
Okay.
Earl McLaurin.
Okay.
But he's able to read and anticipate what you're going to do with the ball.
I know her, Earl. Yeah.
You know, Earl. Yeah, so, Earl's
older
than Earl actually helped us this Christmas.
Okay.
During the Christmas term, he sat on the sideline with us and coached.
Yeah.
But learning from those guys, you know, he reads it, anticipates, steals, boom, layup.
Yeah.
That's 2 points for us. We didn't have to do anything offensively.
Yeah.
That was all off his defense.
Well, you're right. His brother was that way.
Heck
from of a
player.
You know, in my early days.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, I probably just missed you at JT because we started, and I'm trying to think of the athletic director that came, Bailey.
Brian Bailey.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Bailey might have come after, but we used to play our games, the church league games over at JT on Saturday mornings.
Okay.
Yeah, we would come over there. And McLaurin played for Second Calvary, I think. He played.
Okay.
Yeah. And then he went on to the Naval Academy. As you were talking about that, you know, we had a parent that talked about certain aspects of the game where you got to want to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to want to play the defense. You got to want to rebound. And it sounds like this kid has that.
He does. He enjoys playing defense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now we preach defense. We emphasize that we do defensive drills in practice. We show him defensive stats, how it benefits us when we. But this kid just naturally has it. He has that innate want and ability to go out and defend and pick his guy up full court. Incredible condition, because he'll do it for four quarters. He plays a lot of minutes for us.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like he's a backup coming off the bench trying to impress the coaches. Like, he's the guy. He already has the position. But something inside of him says, no, I want to make it difficult for my guy tonight. And we've had opposing coaches say that. If we have a win and we're shaking hands after the game on the line, they'll say, your kid just wouldn't let us get into our offense tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
he made it difficult for us to get into our sets and run them comfortably.
See, and that's an aspect of the game that I don't know if it's fully appreciated by the younger player.
Mm-hmm.
You
mm-hmm.
know, because when you have when an opposing coach says that your player wouldn't allow us to do what we wanted to do.
Yep.
See, that's a lot different than a coach saying, man, we couldn't stop so-and-so because they dropped 30 or whatever.
Yeah.
But I think, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on it, I think a coach that faces an opposing player that is so disruptive,
mm-hmm.
I think that's a lot more demoralizing.
It is. We play Greensboro Day every year. Coach Freddie Johnson,
mm-hmm.
Legendary coach. I think he's got the most wins in North Carolina history for a high school coach.
Okay.
They're the best defensive team that we see every year. When we prepare for them, when we plan for them, it's not about what they're doing offensively. And he's got talent. I mean, he's got guys that are going, three or four guys every year that's going D1.
Mm-hmm.
It's not so much about, man, how are we going to stop them from scoring? Our biggest concern when we play them each year is, how are we going to score? Because
mm-hmm.
their half-court man-to-man defense, they get after it. They smother you. They don't even pick you up full court. You advance the ball to half court, but when you get to half court, they're waiting on you.
Mm-hmm.
Their rotations are flawless. They're in the passing lane. Their help side is there. They take charges like crazy. So our biggest concern when we play them is, are we going to get a good look at the basket? That's more frustrating than trying to stop a high-scoring player or one or two kids that can really fill it up.
Because mm-hmm.
sometimes you can find ways to at least slow them down.
Yeah.
But when a team plays defense like that, we've had games where we played Greensboro Day and the end of the first quarter, it may be 14-2.
Mm-hmm.
So they haven't put up a ton of points, but we're sitting at 2 points.
Yeah.
And not only are you sitting at 2 points, they're not doing anything fancy. So it's not like, well, if we run our press breaker better, we can get some layups, or if we can beat their trap. They're just playing you straight up man-to-man,
mm-hmm.
and you can't get a good look at the basket. So now you're scratching your head trying to figure out, how are we going to break down this defense? Because everywhere we pass the ball, or if we break down somebody off the dribble, the help comes immediately.
Mm-hmm.
If you got a drive to the, or you think you have a drive to the basket, they're stepping in, taking a charge. So it's like, oh my gosh. And it weighs on the kids as the game goes on. The kids get frustrated. Now you start jacking up quick shots.
Because mm-hmm.
you're just trying to get a shot off.
Yeah.
So if you rotate the ball one time and you think you have a look, I got to shoot it because I don't know if I'm going to get this look again.
Mm-hmm.
So it's I'd rather face a team that has a couple of guys that can score versus a team that really gets after it on defense. That's a lot tougher to face.
Yeah, that's I think that's kind of a part of the game that mm-hmm. really doesn't get appreciated, and it takes more from you as a coach, because you mentioned you got to be in shape.
Mm-hmm.
You got to get your conditioning
yep.
together. You got to have that mindset, you know, and then you really have to, you know, I mean, it has to be, you know, it has to be kind of like a way of life type of thing.
It does. And one thing that I find interesting, too, is when you look at these guys who work out with personal trainers, and I watch a lot of these workouts, too, you never see, I haven't seen defense being emphasized in the workout.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever a kid does an individual workout, or if it's a small group workout with two or three guys, it's always offensive based.
Mm-hmm.
Ball handling, shooting, one-on-one moves to the basket, think counter moves, things like that. I've never seen a workout where, okay, all we're doing today is defense. Now, I don't know if it's because the parents won't buy into that, because they're paying these trainers, so,
yeah,
you know, as a trainer, I would want my money too.
Mm-hmm.
And if what you want me to work on with your child is offense, okay, well, that's what we'll do.
Because
mm-hmm. I don't want to lose you as a customer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But again, to your point, where is the emphasis on defense? And I think too, when I go to some of these showcase events too, the kids that seem to get the notoriety are the ones that score.
Oh, yeah.
So kids see that and they're on social media and they read about all the kids that get the write-ups are the ones that score 20 and 30 points. I never see the kid get the write-up that he had 4 points, but, man, he locked his guy down.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the article on that kid? Where's the scholarship offer for that kid?
Mm-hmm.
How many kids get recruited and they average 4 or 5 points a game, but they're the best defender on the floor?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To get recruited, coaches preach defense, but at the end of the day, you got to put the ball in the basket.
Yeah.
So I think kids see that, and so their focus is, at the end of the day, I got to be a good offensive player.
Yeah.
I need to play defense. But the priority, or what I'm seeing as the priority, is offense.
Yeah,
that's what's being rewarded.
And that's when it gets down to it, you know, it's a business, and people want to,
yep.
you know, I mean, that's what, you know, draws the fans. You know, that part of that philosophy of defense is offense. I think that it's also a part of, you know, growing and maturing, because now, you know, you're placed in a situation that maybe pushes you outside of your comfort zone,
mm-hmm.
you know, and really to ascend to, you know, higher levels.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, you got to get out of that.
You
got to get out of your comfort zone And people naturally, I mean, you know, we all do it. We get out there, we pick up that ball, we trying to put it through the hoop, you know. Yeah. But it's like you said, I mean, when you try to, you know, when you're trying to have a mindset, well, I'm going to be disruptive.
Yep.
You know, I'm going to have that coach say, you know, man, I just didn't let us, you know, let us get into the game at all.
Exactly. And we tell guys that as far as, you know, to kind of go back to the recruiting process, if you're not scoring, maybe that's one of the ways where you can get a coach's attention. Go pick your guy up full court and not just pick him up, but make yourself seen. Like, be vocal. I got so-and-so. Like, announce it to the gym. Like, I'm picking my guy full court, and I want everyone to see this. Mm-hmm. But now, you know, with social media and camera phones are out everywhere, some guys are really afraid to exert themselves on defense because if they get crossed up, if they fall, like, it's going to be on everybody's video.
Mm.
It's going to be on everybody's Instagram or Snapchat, Facebook, whatever.
Yeah.
So a lot of guys know that, and they're like, I don't want to get embarrassed, so I'm going to play defense, but I'm not going to go all out on defense like that.
Mm-hmm.
So if so-and-so crosses me up, I can say, well, I wasn't really trying. I, you know, I wasn't going at him like that.
Yeah.
And then I don't want to be on anybody's video.
Yeah.
That's the last thing I want is to go viral because I got crossed up and I fell down on the floor.
Yeah.
Even though as coaches, we're like, it doesn't bother us. It doesn't mess up your playing time or anything. But from a kid's perspective, that's all they see on social media is the ankle breakers or the kids that are being crossed up. So now they're a little hesitant to go 110% on defense because they see that stuff.
I got you.
Yeah.
Well, talk a little bit more because I had a question I wanted to ask you about. What's some of your biggest concerns about, you know, players in the game today? I mean, you know, and you kind of touched on a little bit with this social media.
Mm-hmm.
You know, clearly that's an area that impacts the game. And we're going to go to a timeout.
Okay.
But on the other side of that timeout, I want to come back and ask you, you know, expand on that, you know, as far as, you know, some concerns you have about, you know, the game, players, you know, and in particular with the, you know, with how social media has an impact on that.
All right.
So we're going to take a timeout. I'm here with Coach Dwayne Cherry. He's at Charlotte Country Day School. I'm Richard Lancaster. This is Beyond Winning, and I'm going to take a 30-second timeout on this one. Beyond the X's, Beyond the O's. Hello, everyone. We're back on Beyond Winning. I'm here with Coach Dwayne Cherry from Charlotte Country Day School. And before we went to the timeout, Coach, I had raised the question with you, just, you know, some of the concerns you have with players in the game today, the challenges it gives or presents to you as a coach. And how you were talking about how social media kind of influences, you know, the amount of effort sometimes that the young player plays. So expand on that a little bit for us.
Yeah, I think today, you know, the game is a lot different because of social media. You know, it can be more challenging to get guys to buy into what you're doing from a program standpoint, if you have a certain system that you like to run, because everything now is so individual-based.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talked about guys that you can run, a philosophy for your program that you can run year after year, and sometimes you're trying to combat what they're being told in other areas. And then kids want to be recruited.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes kids feel like they know or they think they know what they should be doing to be recruited, and they don't trust the coaches.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've been fortunate to have, you know, pretty good kids in the program, and they've trusted myself and Coach Ken McNish, who also coaches with me at Charlotte Country Day. We've had good kids, so we haven't had a lot of difficulty with that, but I know coaches at other schools that really battle that.
Mm-hmm.
Kids want to be recruited, and they feel like if I do A, B, and C, I can be recruited, but it's going against what the coach is telling them.
Yeah.
And then another big thing you see is the NBA game, which they watch all the time, is totally different from the college game.
Yeah.
at most colleges, coaches have a system in place. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's Roy Williams at Carolina running the secondary break, you know, Princeton basketball where it's based on backdoor cuts and ball movement. Well, the NBA game is played completely different.
Yeah.
It's a lot of individual isolation, one-on-one basketball. So kids see that, but we're trying to tell them, well, if you want to be recruited to play at the college level, you're going to have to buy into a system.
Mm-hmm.
You're not in the NBA yet.
Yeah.
You know, you got to make it to the college game first. So you have to be able to play within a system.
Yeah.
So when coaches come to the game to recruit and watch you, they want to see, can you play in a system? Because if we bring you to our school, you got to buy into the system that we're running.
Okay.
So can you buy into what your high school coach is doing? If not, it's probably a small chance you're going to buy into what we're doing at the university.
Mm-hmm.
But all they see is NBA, social media. You got these mixtapes out all over.
Yeah.
And these are kids, you know, showing their ball handling skills, dunking on people, doing all. It's individual.
Yeah.
You don't see a lot of mixtapes or highlight tapes where it's team-based.
Team-related.
You know, yeah. It's about this player or that player. So I want to be on the next mixtape.
Well, you made a couple of good points. Trust, and somewhat in this area of what we've termed AA or high school free agency. You had a player that, you know, mm-hmm. You know, is in that mix.
Yeah.
You probably benefited from players being in that mix, you know, from that standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think the longevity that you've had, you know, and your coaching, mm-hmm. you know, you've been able to develop trust with these players, especially when they have a lot of the voices in their ear.
Yeah, yeah. And so I think one of the benefits is the fact that I teach at the school.
Yeah.
So I'm there during the day.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not a coach that's showing up after school. So I actually see some kids I actually have in my class.
Uh-huh.
You know, I teach Algebra 1 and Geometry.
Okay.
So some of the players I may even have in my class. So whether they're in my class or the fact that I'm there all day really gives me a chance to build a relationship with these players.
Uh-huh.
They'll stop by the classroom during the day just to hang out. We might have lunch together. You know, things like that. So
you're
it gives
to get
us a chance.
The biscuit to chicken ratio together, right? You know.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
Trying to get that right.
Yeah.
Trying to get that ratio together.
I hear you.
but that's a huge benefit. So it allows us to have good relationships with the players. And then I do things like, you know, if they're playing AAU basketball, I'll go to their tournaments,
mm-hmm.
their events to
yeah.
support them. You know, although they're not playing for me,
mm-hmm.
I do know a lot of AAU coaches. And you do, you know, AAU, I don't want to make it seem like AAU is a bad thing because you got a lot of good coaches.
Yeah.
Like, the Epps kid that I had, some of my guys have played with Jeff McGinnis,
mm-hmm.
Team Charlotte.
Yeah.
Outstanding coach.
Yeah.
You know, he can coach circles around a lot of us in high school.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a lot of great coaches out there in the AAU circle.
Oh, absolutely.
But so I go out and support those guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let them know that regardless of who they're playing for, as your coach and hopefully as your friend now, because you want to develop the relationship past just coaching them. As a friendship, I'm here to support you.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that goes a long way, too, when they come back to play for you.
Yeah.
They see that, oh, coach really cares about me. You know, he drove down to South Carolina or down to Atlanta to watch me play an AAU event.
Yeah.
You know, just showing them. And the parents see that as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
mm-hmm.
that's another benefit is also.
Yeah.
But the Epps kid that's now over at Carmel Christian with Joe Badgett, you know, his situation, because Joe and I are good friends.
Sure.
You know, his situation was one where it was the 8th semester rule
mm-hmm.
that came into play.
I got you.
He came to us from West Charlotte, and he reclassed, did his sophomore year over. And so just like CMS, you only get 8 semesters to play in our conference.
I got you.
So because he had done 2 years at West Charlotte, he did 2 years for us. There's an appeal process you can go through where you may be granted an additional year if you have extenuating circumstances. They didn't grant him that extra year. So really, he was in a situation where he had to go.
Yeah.
And, you know, Joe's a great guy. Dinkins was there at the time.
Yeah.
So we all felt like Carmel Christian would be a good move for him.
Yeah.
So I didn't want that to be out there like,
sure.
Joe came and took one of our players,
Exactly,
yeah. No, it was
I wanted you to comment on that because there's a community out there. I mean,
yeah.
and again, these have been coaches that have been on this program.
Mm-hmm.
And so You guys all know each other.
Yep,
you know, and while you go tooth and nail when it's game time, you guys do what's best for the kids.
Exactly.
You know, that's the one common thread that I think for all of them, you want to see these kids advance.
Exactly.
Coach, we're going to go in a totally different direction.
Okay.
With the off-the-wall question.
Okay.
Which is, that's, you know, the off-the-wall question has been that, you know.
Yep.
Before we get to that, though, I, you know, like I said earlier, I saw you had some skills. And just talk to me, what musical genre would you say best reflects your coaching style?
Oh, wow, that's a good question. I would think hip hop.
Mm-hmm. I would think that too, based on what I saw. But I'll let you, you know.
I would think hip hop.
And ladies and gentlemen, what I'm talking about is the biscuit, the chicken to biscuit ratio, and this musical genre question. It came up from a little bit of my research on Coach Cherry, and if you want to see it, I think he's at Dwayne Cherry 33 or Cherry 33.
Coach Cherry
93. 93. Okay, so if you want to see what I'm talking about, I'll let you follow up with him.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, I would think hip hop, because hip hop is constantly evolving, and as a coach, I try to do the same thing. You know, I try to, whatever system we have in place for that year, I try to adapt it to the talent that we have.
Mm-hmm.
I know some coaches have, they run the flex offense every year. Regardless of what their personnel is, we run flex or we run motion. I try to change what we run based on the strengths of the guys that we have.
Mm-hmm.
Like this year, we don't necessarily have a go-to guy like we had the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So we may get out and run a little bit more. Whereas last year, with the kid that we had, we played a lot more iso ball, ball screen action, putting them in pick and roll situation. Years before, where we didn't have a lot of talent at all, when I first got there, we run a lot of motion offense.
Mm-hmm.
Let's try to score within the offense. We don't really have a guy that can get his own shot. So everything's going to have to come out of you. So, you know, I would like to think hip hop, because it's always evolving. Different people can fit into it.
Mm-hmm.
Hip hop seems to be a culture where it embraces a lot of different styles. You know what I mean? So hip-hop is not a culture that's limited to one particular fan base.
Mm-hmm.
Older people, younger people, white, black, Asian, Hispanic. Everybody seems to embrace hip-hop,
mm-hmm.
at least the music part of it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I would like to think, as a coach, I'm kind of like that, embracing all types of players, short, tall, limited, talented, you know, whatever. So mm-hmm. And then just trying to evolve each year as a coach. You know, you saw hip-hop go from the early stages of the break dancing and all that stuff to the hardcore stage to now, you know, it's not as hardcore as it used to be.
Right.
Love songs, mm-hmm. like when LL Cool J made I Need Love, you know,
there
that kind of changed everything with hip hop.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like to think of my coaching style somewhat as being similar to hip hop.
That inclusive creativity,
yep.
innovation,
mm-hmm.
that kind of thing.
Exactly.
Well, Coach, now that wasn't an off the wall question.
Okay.
That was another question in the lineup. But here's the off the wall question.
Okay.
Okay. And there's usually something current that's happened that I'll ask you. So, Dr. Charlie Sifford,
uh-huh.
Lee Elder,
mm-hmm.
or Tiger.
And before I answer this, I'm not a big golf guy. I have a lot of, all my friends, that's like I'm the only one that doesn't play.
Okay.
All my buddies play golf,
mm-hmm.
and they've been trying to get me out there. I've been to the driving range one time,
mm-hmm.
and they laughed at me the whole time because I was just trying to, like, I've been
Charles
in the weight
Barkley.
Room.
Yeah,
yeah, I'm just
going
to knock it out. So I had no technique or anything. That's a tough one. And because of the time that Charles Sifford and Lee Elder came in,
uh-huh.
with all of the obstacles they had to face. Tiger, I mean, from a record book standpoint, statistically has had the most success. But when you look at what those other two had to face, like being the first black to be on the PGA, I could only imagine what kind of obstacles Charles Sifford had to go through just to get on the tour.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no, he's not going to have the number of wins that Tiger has. Because during that time, just to get on the tour, your ability had to be incredible.
Sure.
You know, because all the things you have to overcome, it's more than just a talent thing. So I can't just be as good as my competition. I have to dominate for them to look past the fact that I'm black and allow me on this PGA Tour.
It might even be, you know, considered a miracle that he was even able to win.
Yes.
A PGA event.
A PGA event.
You know, given what he had to go through.
Exactly.
You know.
And then something, and then, you know, obviously he's a hometown guy, Charlotte guy, so yeah. he gets kudos for that. And then Lee Elder, first black, to win a Masters?
Mm-hmm. Well, to play in the Masters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, overcoming barriers like that. And Tiger has done a lot for golf. I think Tiger has changed golf, and he's kind of coming up, you know, where he's more marketable now. I think he benefited from guys like Michael Jordan really pumping the Nike brand out there like that, to where when he came along, he's able to get the big deals and the promotion and the marketing. An incredible golfer in his own right. And I think he's taking it to another level in the black community.
Mm-hmm.
At least, you know, now I'm a little too young to, I didn't grow up in the Charles Sifford Lee Elder era. But at least from what I saw with Tiger, he got a lot of blacks just to start playing golf.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he seemed to make it popular in the black community, whereas when I was a kid, I don't remember any blacks ever picking up a golf club.
There's actually, you know, a young kid, Harold Varner, who's from this Gastonia area, grew up playing over here in Gastonia, is on the tour now.
Wow.
And he's done quite well. He's done quite well. He's had a lot of top 10 finishes and that kind of thing. The thing about Tiger that you mentioned, and I think with this latest, his, you know, him winning recently,
yep,
it's amazing that, you know, given everything that he's been through,
mm-hmm,
you know, the personal issues, the injuries, that kind of thing, he gets in a position to win, and he's approaching, you know, the last hole on number 18, and the crowd is so thick.
Yeah.
He can't even get to the green.
He can't get to the green. I saw everybody following him as he was,
That's...
He's... Ah, boy, this is a tough question. I mean, yeah, he's definitely in an era now where he's clearly the biggest figure out of those three. You know, I just think, you know, what those other guys had to go through. Wow, that I could only imagine.
Well, Coach, you answered the question. I'm not gonna make you choose.
Okay.
You answered the question. Hey, Coach, I tell you, I'm glad we got together. I'm glad
Absolutely.
We kept at it to get together. I'm glad that you could make it out.
Me too.
I wish you all the best, you know, this season.
Thank you.
I hope to have you back again.
Definitely.
As we're winding up this first season, and really appreciate, you know, your contributions to the game. Last program we had Coach Sarge on.
Okay.
And he said, well, you need to get Preston and Coach Cherry together.
Preston Davis.
So there you go. I got a little bit of another program idea. So maybe I can get you two on together.
Because
I think, you know, you guys grew up together, got some, you know. You know, I know he's a little, you know, he's got some credit hours now. He's got that state championship under his belt.
State championship.
Yeah,
Preston and I met. Preston used to date my sister.
Oh, okay.
That's how we met.
Okay.
He and my younger sister dated. My oldest son is now at Independence playing for Preston.
Okay,
so
there you go.
He's in the program over at Independence, so he and I are very close. You're a great guy.
Yeah,
you're doing
a
great job with the program over there.
Yeah, cool. Well, Coach, I really have enjoyed having you on. I really appreciate you coming out.
Thank you for having me.
And being on the program. Hey, everyone, this has been Beyond Winning, and we hope that this program, that you enjoyed the program, that you found it insightful and valuable. And if you get an opportunity, tell us what you think about the program. You know, tell us where you enjoyed the program. You know, you like certain aspects of it. And also tell us where we need to step it up a little bit, or where we might have put you to sleep. But in any regards, please tell us. And as I like to sign off on the program each time that we do, I encourage you to stay aware. And above all, I want you to stay with it and stay on it. This has been Richard Lancaster. I've had on Coach Dwayne Cherry, and this has been Beyond Winning. And take care, everyone. Have a good afternoon.